fires deep, middle of the field, intercepted. An incredible pick by Patrick Peterson.
Welcome to Arizona Cardinals Underground, presented by the Arizona Cardinals mobile app. Visit azcardinals.com/app.
Touchdown, Arizona!
The latest news and notes from the guys who cover the team.
Oh, baby! They can't block Calais Campbell.
Cuts right to the five, Brown to the end zone. He's in! Touchdown!
You've got to be kidding me, Carson Palmer.
From Cardinals headquarters in Tempe.
Touchdown, Larry Fitzgerald!
This is football at its finest.
Here's Paul Calvisi.
Now, were either one of you guys, you can tell it's bye week because Darren Urban's already laughing. All right, if it's a game week, you wipe that smile off your face, mister. Paul Calvisi, Darren Urban, Kyle Odegaard.
Well, wait a minute. Last week, I was being told I couldn't talk bye week and I had to get super serious. Now we are to the bye week and I still have to get super serious?
We call audibles as we see them when it comes to the ground rules around here. I'm going to start with a question, as I typically do. Were either one of you gentlemen in the team picture? No. You don't get the day off. You don't get extra days off. That's why you're here on Cardinals Underground. Let's just keep it clear, okay?
Email must have gone to my spam box on accident. I'm sure I was invited.
We'll Photoshop you in, as far as you know. Here's the quote that I think sums up the first half of the season. You guys can agree or disagree. Harold Goodwin, coming off the Cardinals' sixth win of the season against two losses, quote, "When we're on, we're really on. When we stink, we really stink. We need to stop stinking at times." Yeah, that pretty much sums up the first half of the season.
I think that's pretty fair. Yeah. At this point, there's been plenty of really on. I think that's fair to say. And really, the stinking part, that's been pretty contained into harsh little boxes. But when they've come out, it's been pretty bad.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it's a little bit overblown, the stinking part, because you look at the overall numbers and you can say the offense is stunk in certain segments, but when you're putting up all these points, you're throwing the ball great, the defense has been really good, you're top five on both sides of the ball, so there's always stuff to complain about, but overall, I'm smelling roses so far.
I don't know. I think you guys need one of those USA Today charts on the website, the stinkometer, the stink gauge, something like that. You guys can just... But wait a minute. They came out on Cleveland. They go down the field in 11 plays, 82 yards, and then the rest of the first half was a stinker for the most part, was it not?
Well, I think defensively it was. I think offensively your big problem was you just had two terrible turnovers that completely sidetracked whatever momentum. I thought the first Chris Johnson fumble really killed them because I felt like they still were riding momentum. And then they kind of reset themselves offensively, I felt, right before the Fitz fumble. And to fumble inside the 10, that's almost like a double turnover to me, because not only are you turning the ball over, but everybody in the entire place, including your entire sideline, thinks you've given away points, which you have. I think that was a killer. And to be honest, there was one last gasp of crappiness right before the half, even though they got the field goal, because they get that miracle touchdown pass, which I never quite got that excited about because I saw all those receivers moving at the same time and I saw the flag come out, so I didn't even think much about that last play. And I don't know if the Browns had seen it too, but that was another kick that hurt.
I felt bad for Jerron Brown on the sideline. That one, man, did he get an earful from Bruce Arians and his position coach, right? Daryl Drake. I mean, they were all over him. Now, it comes out later, it was revealed that it was really J.J. Nelson, yeah. And then other guys are trying to compensate for his mistake in alignment error.
Yeah, and that all goes back to John Brown not playing and J.J. having to fill in there, not knowing exactly what to do at that point. So just a lot of miscommunication on that play, but overall, really nice play by Floyd to catch that ball.
You know what, quite frankly, after the weekend, I thought we officially had a ban on not talking about John Brown not playing. I mean, I've had enough of that for a couple days.
Is that for real? See, I'm not engaged in Twitter like you guys are. I mean, did he really take that much of a social media beatdown?
Oh, he did.
Oh, yeah.
And I got some of the collateral damage there, too.
You got blowback?
Well, I got lots of blowback because a lot of times I'm the one who people are seeing
you didn't,
as...
Give us the complete story, Darren Urban, and my fantasy league team got hosed because of you.
Essentially, most people were mad at the team for making him active, but I ignored most of it. And then there was one tweet that came in late Sunday night that I just couldn't get past because it basically suggested the team should put out some kind of statement or address it in the media of why they made John Brown active when they weren't going to play him. And I just lost it. And then I started tweeting people back and I just...
At least the people that are hardcore Cardinals fans that are mad, they're just emotional.
Yes.
These other fans, they're not even fans of teams anymore. They're just fans of their own fantasy team, and they don't care anything about John Brown's real life.
It was probably the stepbrother, the guy who called in after the Ravens win and said Bruce Arians deserved an F this season for coaching. It was probably that guy.
I'm just going to say this. I have nothing against fantasy football. I participate in fantasy football myself. But please, nobody else cares about your team in particular.
You can care about your team all you want. Yep.
Nobody else cares about your team, especially the guys who coach it and play it for real. So that's all I have to say about
John Brown cleared that up, I think, on Twitter this week.
Well, I was going to ask you guys for your legitimate concerns of the first half of the season. That doesn't qualify. No, I'm sorry. That doesn't make the cut. I'll start here. You know what I don't like so far is this trend of giving up red zone touchdowns. And Coach Arians actually referenced it in his Tuesday press conference. And you know what? A year ago, they were very, very good on sudden change.
Yeah.
Almost inevitably, and I don't know what the percentage was, and I'm not sure exactly where it ranked, but it was a very impressive eyeball test. They passed the test when it came to holding teams to a field goal on a sudden change of possession, especially deep in their own territory.
Yeah, I don't know. I kind of disagree a little bit where it's you're looking at the number of times they get down there, and it's just going to always be a small sample, I think, and it's hard to tell if that's something indicative of problems because you look at it overall, the defense has been good, the rush defense has been good, so I think the Browns got it three times on third down. If you stop them once, it doesn't look as worse. I don't think it's a glaring issue moving forward, but we'll certainly see how it goes.
I'm going to side with Paul on this one. I don't think it's an overwhelming concern, but I will say this. One of the things that bugged me about the Browns' touchdowns was not only were you giving up red zone touchdowns, but you were getting them in third down positions to get that stop, to force that field goal, and then you were giving up the touchdown. I think sometimes that feels harsher than if they somehow get it on first or second down. You get them in a position where you can get out of it, and you're just not finishing off that hold. And I think you would like to see that. I agree. It hasn't happened a lot. But again, when you're talking about sudden change and you're talking about the turnovers, and let's face it, the two losses were based almost entirely because they turned the ball over and couldn't force turnovers. You've got to come up with those stops and manage to overcome it. I mean, the Cardinals were lucky in a lot of ways to be a -4 at one point in Cleveland and have the lead. That was one of the most amazing things I've seen in a while.
I just don't think you can point to anything in the red zone defensively that they're doing specifically wrong. I think
probably true.
The pass rush is an issue, but that's an issue all throughout the field. So I think if you get a better pass rush, it'll help you in the red zone. It'll help you everywhere. But I don't point to one thing where like you're getting gashed in the run game in the red zone or anything. I think it's just been kind of small sample.
You know, if you made me give you a reason why, it would be defensive IQ. It would be minus a Larry Foote. It would be I guess it just seems like they've been exploited more when their backs are against the goal line than they were a year ago.
I feel like it, when you talk about that, there's been more discussion about guys getting out of their gaps more this year than I remember last year. Now, maybe I'm forgetting that part of it, but I feel like that has come up a lot more often. Now, they needed their defense a lot more last year, early in the season when they built that 8-1 record or 9-1 record, because the offense was not clicking and it was not scoring a ton of points, and that's why all the games were close. And if the defense didn't play, you know, right to the screws every single game, they weren't going to win all those games. So maybe that was it. But that's what I keep thinking is like, I don't remember this kind of discussion about being out of place as much.
And to illustrate his point there about the offense, think about it. The Cardinals through 8 games have scored as many touchdowns as they did all of last season. My goodness, 32 touchdowns this season, 32 touchdowns all of last season. That illustrates Darren's point into a more specific point. I think it illustrates, okay, have Carson, will produce. It shows you when you have him for every game through the first half of the season.
Yeah, and I mean, I think they've even produced more than even we expected. We saw how good he was in the offseason, and I think everybody that was around the team expected that ACL tear to be no problem. He was going to come back and do great, but I'd be hard-pressed to think that anybody besides maybe Carson would believe that he could have put up these numbers. The offense was going to roll that well for every single game. Nobody's really slowed them down.
The stat that I saw, and all due credit to stats guru Mike Helm of the Media Relations Department who came up with this one, the Cardinals in 8 games have had at least 400 yards of offense in 6 of them. The Cardinals had 6 games total of 400 yards of offense the previous five seasons.
Whoa. Wow.
So since Warner retired up until this year, they had six games of 400 yards. They've already got six games of 400 yards this year.
I waive my no math rule for that one. That's a good stat there. No, okay, but here's the thing. As Carson said himself in meeting the media before the bye week, quote, we've gotten away with them against teams we've played, but not going forward. What's he talking about? Those lulls.
Yeah.
Is that a concern? Or do you think, oh, a road game at Seattle is going to lock these guys in on a Sunday night? An unbeaten Cincinnati team on a Sunday night primetime game. Is that going to be enough to lock this team in?
I'm less concerned about the lulls, and I'm more concerned about the defenses that they're going to face now because the first – eight games. I mean, some of those defenses were okay, but none of them were great. And the fact that I still don't understand. I think the second half of the Pittsburgh game was a lull. Other than that, I think you have to give credit to the other teams at times when you throw an interception or fumble the ball. Those guys are hitting it out or hitting you or whatever. So, but I think you look at it and you're playing Seattle on the road. It's going to be a huge test, and I can't wait to see if they can move the ball against a defense that good.
This team is on pace to absolutely obliterate. Now, again, on pace, and they're going to face better defenses, but on pace to obliterate their points scored in a season. I also find it hard to talk about lulls because you're going to not score as many points against a Rams defense or a Steelers defense as you are against the 49ers and or the Browns, for instance, and you still scored 34 points the other day. And are we now starting to talk, which is great if you set the bar super high, and that's necessary. And this team has certainly done that, especially offensively at this point. But are we now talking about if you don't score in 8 out of 10 possessions, you've hit a lull? Because and a lot of times that's what we're talking about, because you're scoring on a 6 out of 10 possessions and scoring 35 points.
I bring it up, though, it's because that's what the coaches are talking about. What the players are talking
you're
about.
Right.
I mean, I have it right in front of me. You know, Larry was asked this week before the bye week, is it scary that you're still 6-2 despite not playing a full 60 minutes? He said, no, it's not scary. It's frustrating. He said, I look at it the other way. We could be 7-1. We could easily be 8-0 if we're playing the way we're capable of playing for 60 minutes, and I think we all agree you're not going to get away with that against some of these teams you're playing in the second half of the season.
Yeah, and especially when those passes were so evident against the Browns when Floyd and Fitzgerald are running for what would have been, I think, 60 and an 85-yard touchdown or something, and Carson just misses them. So people remember plays like that, but every team has that. You know, you watch any NFL game for 60 minutes, there's going to be 3 or 4 or 5 plays that you want back, and I don't think there's any way to play a perfect game, but they keep saying we haven't played a perfect game, and I don't think it's possible, but you look at, like, that Niners game, can't play much better than that.
Well, and I look at – it's also about perspective. You look at that Broncos-Packers game, and it's like the Packers were horrible offensively. So are the Packers going back all this week and saying, God, we had way too many lulls in that game? I think a lot of that had to do with how great the Broncos defense was.
All right. Concern, true or false, interior O-line, especially now that Lyle Sendlin is dealing with a shoulder injury that may or may not keep him out of Seattle.
I would be concerned. I mean, I think as we've gone through the year, I don't think there's been a couple times where they brought up Lyle Sendlin needing to play a little bit better. So we're not talking about a Pro Bowl type person at this point, but there's a reason he beat out A.Q. Shipley. And to be going into the Seattle game makes you think a little bit about it. I guess it also depends on where you're looking at. You know, somebody like Pro Football Focus I was reading today had high praise for both Upati and Valdir since they've been together the last few games. So there's that. And their bigger concern, rather than Jonathan Cooper or Lyle Sendlin, was Bobby Massey, a right tackle. So I think it's how you look at everything. I think the offensive line has done an okay job. There's been times that they could get better, but I think it's been fairly solid. I mean, scoring a lot of points and getting a lot of yards. That's kind of how you measure it.
The run blocking's been a lot better this season. I think Upati's been playing well. And the fact that Sendlin might not play, but you have a guy like A.Q. Shipley behind him who isn't like an undrafted rookie who hasn't done it before. He has experience, so even though it might be a downgrade, you don't worry that he's just going to like totally mess up. And interior offensive line, I think you can get away with guys that aren't great and it won't affect you too much.
Well, I mean, Russell Wilson's been sacked, almost 3 times as many instances as Carson Palmer so far this season. I mean, if you want to talk about porous offensive lines, look at your next opponent.
Yeah,
that's true. And that's such a big thing for the Cardinals. I know it's looking ahead a little bit, but being able to get pressure on him and the offensive line that the Cardinals have used, and we talk about their potential and getting better, but they've done good, and it seems like pretty good in pass protection. And even if it hasn't done great, Carson's always known when to get rid of the ball, and then the run blocking has been a lot better. So still room for improvement, but overall, I think a pretty good job by the offensive line.
All right, so defense giving up touchdowns in the red zone, the lulls, the interior line pass rush. Are we concerned about the pass rush? You know, it's sort of been a default setting, but wait a minute, Alex Okafor is coming back for Seattle, and Dwight Freeney has two sacks in two games.
You know, I think they could be okay. I mean, I think that's always going to be the first thing I think about with this team is where's the pressure going to come from? Can you get it? Now, I think that you look at the offensive lines they're going to be seeing the rest of the year. The Bengals have a pretty good offensive line. The Seahawks you see twice. They don't have a very good offensive line. I wonder a little bit about the Vikings offensive line. The Rams don't have
Holt to begin the year.
The Rams don't have a great offensive line. The 49ers certainly don't have a great offensive line. No. The Packers are okay. I mean, that's kind of the state of the offensive lines. Now, we can talk about this offensive line, but there's not a whole lot of great offensive lines. So when it comes to the Cardinals pass rush, I think you can have some things. I like the idea of having the rotation out there possible with Okafor coming back, and now you have Freeney. And what I'm really interested is now you got four outside linebackers who, when they've been in there, have played a lot. So what's your rotation now? What's between Freeney and Golden and Okafor and Woodley? Who's the odd man out? Because I don't know if one of those guys is not going to be getting a lot of snaps. I wouldn't think.
I'm thinking Okafor and Freeney on third down. I'm thinking, you know, that'd be my guess, at least initially, you know, and so it's obvious passing situations. And this might be a reach. What about inside linebacker? Because we saw Sean Weatherspoon all of a sudden get some snaps. What does that say? Is there maybe they're not as satisfied with Kevin Minter as they were earlier this year?
I'm wondering if that was in response to Duke Johnson having a couple of really good runs or catch and runs and the way he just kind of blew by Minter. Obviously, Minter isn't going to be great in coverage. Everybody knows that, but he's equipped himself well enough. And then maybe there might be some matchups where they want Weatherspoon in there instead of Minter. But I still think once they ironed out the problems, and I think it sounded like more of just an alignment thing where they didn't want him in space, and you keep him inside, you're doing
and
okay.
It was funny, too. I noticed that early, and then when I went back and looked at the stat sheet, Weatherspoon only had like five defensive snaps.
Yeah, I'm not saying he had a lot.
Right, no. Yeah. But I mean, like, I noticed it early, so
it must have been early. Yeah, it was early, yeah.
It must have been early, and then they decided not to do it anymore, and especially in that second half when they were doing all the domination. So I did notice it, Paul, and I'd be curious to know if he can get in the mix or if they want him to get in the mix, but
here's what
he's
else.
Definitely a different skill set from Minter, so it doesn't hurt to have him available and playing well.
Here's what else sort of fuels my speculation. In Bruce Arians' last meeting with the media on Wednesday before the bye week, someone asked about the young guys because the practice before had featured a lot of young guys, and he started with Gabe Martin, Alani Fua.
Yes, he did.
And so, you know, that was conspicuous by its mention. You know, BA usually has a method to his madness, sort of like bringing up Calais Campbell, you know, once again. I mean, there. And so I just sort of wondered about that. You know, he has a way of citing and naming names in a manner in which he hopes to motivate guys. And speaking of Calais, how surprised were you guys? What do you think he's not getting out of Calais that he wants? Because you got a guy coming off a Pro Bowl season who gets doubled nearly every snap. I'm just wondering.
It does feel at this point like this is gonna. It's like 4 weeks go by, and then it's time for BA to lower the boom on Calais Campbell, and then 4 weeks go by, and then here comes another. And I just, to me, it's a motivating tactic. I know that they want domination all the time from Calais Campbell. I mean, we're 8-9 years into Calais Campbell's career. I don't know how much more of the upside there is. I mean, you kind of know who he is. I mean, I think you need to keep him motivated, but I don't know if all of a sudden you're going to see this guy that is out there being J.J. Watt. I don't know if that's going to happen. And if you look at the metrics people and out there, they still love it, what Calais does on a week-to-week basis. In fact, that was what was funny to me, which I noted in one of my blog posts. You know, Bruce comes out and talks about how he should have dominated this weekend. And then like 2 hours later in my inbox in the email, Pro Football Focus sends out, you know, their review of the Cardinals game. And one of them was that the best rated defender for the Cardinals that day from their perspective was Calais Campbell.
Calais Campbell.
So it's
maybe he wants that J.J. Watt motor. Maybe that's what he wants out of Calais. And I'll give you an example. It was the Baltimore game on Monday night, and it was in the first half. In 72, their interior guard that Calais pretty much beat the dog out of in the entire game. After one snap, he had Calais grabbed underneath the armpit in his jersey, and he wouldn't let go. And it was a good 1-1000, 2-1000 after the whistle. Wouldn't let go on Calais. And then Calais really knocked his arm away. And I watched him multiple times. I said, okay, look out. Because on the Big Red Rage, Calais says he won't start it. But in his words, he won't be punked either. In the very next play, he came off the ball, and he did some sort of swim arm rip move, and he just discarded this guy like he was standing, I mean, like he was a school kid, and he had a tackle for a loss on that snap. And I wonder if that's what Bruce Arians is seeing and saying, you know what, if he played with that sort of temperament every single snap, look out.
That's what I'm wondering. And, I mean, Bruce and Calais are such different personalities, just completely different ends of the spectrum. And I'm sure Bruce wants to get that out of him every single snap. And, you know, we do mention the way he plays run defense, probably one of the best interior linemen against the run in the whole NFL. But you look, he's only got 1.5 sacks, and he's never going to be a traditional defensive end that gets, like, you know, 12 to 14 sacks, but you still want him to get 8 to 10, and right now he's not on that pace. So I think they want more impact plays out of him, and he's got the potential to do it, which is why it probably drives him a little crazy that he can be a superstar.
And the other thing too, I think, and I'm not sure off the top of my head who the Browns had at guard, but the bottom line is, I think the feeling is, it's one thing if you go against a really good guard or tackle, but if he's, I think the feeling is, if he's going against any kind of mediocrity against him, which he will see in, like, Seattle, for instance, I think they expect domination, and that's a fair expectation.
Well, historically, he has a great track record in Seattle. I mean, he had that 3-sack first half, I think, 2 years ago, and he'll admit it. He said, against St. Louis at home and against Seattle on the road, it's all, for whatever reason, and I can't explain it, I excel. Those are my best games of my career, and you can track it. I mean, there's actually – somebody get Mike Helm on this, okay? He can break down that stat over there for him.
Exactly.
By the way, I'll just cite another trend that I've noticed in the first half of the season down on the sideline is the emergence of Tyrann Mathieu. Not necessarily the player, but the leader. Tyrann Mathieu is so much more vocal now than he was in the beginning of the year. He's now breaking down the team. We saw him after the Monday night win in the locker room after BA spoke, and he just went off and delivered like a 20-second impromptu speech. He comes over to the D linemen and the linebackers now and just goes off. I mean, he's just motivating. And I've talked to a few different guys who say, yeah, he is now breaking down the team in practice, and he's slowly but surely evolved into a very vocal leader, Tyrann Mathieu.
I think that's a sign of a guy that's very comfortable with who he is, and coming into this season and knowing what he was capable of, but having last season where he never could quite get back healthy, and then coming in and having the start that he did, having the pick six against the Niners, and just knowing that, hey, I'm back and I'm one of the better defenders total overall in the NFL, and just feeling like he's in his third year now, he can kind of be more of a leader. I think all that just kind of came together, and all the other guys really enjoy Tyrann, so I'm sure it pumps everybody up.
All right, so we covered a lot of concerns. I'll just leave. This would be my final point. What gives me the most confidence going into the second half of the season is the Cardinals' run game. And Carson cited it when we were talking to him at his locker early before the bye week started. And he said the most glaring difference in this team and this offense versus last year is our run game. And I think a team like Seattle may find out the hard way exactly what the Cardinals are all about with this run game. That's the thing I'm most intrigued to see when you go up there, because if you can run the ball, especially as tough as it is to communicate with the O-line, if you can just come off the ball and plow straight ahead, that's advantage of visiting opponent.
I completely agree. And the run game does change the dynamic of so many things. If nothing else, it makes you feel like a complete team. I mean, even if we go back, and when I was doing a story on the offense and all the points they're scoring, and I mean, a lot of the records that they have or they're chasing offensively go back to that 2008 Super Bowl team. But that 2008 Super Bowl team did not run the ball very well.
No.
And
they got some balance once the playoffs rolled around,
once
really.
The playoffs started a little bit. But it wasn't enough, and it wasn't like this team, and that's why there's this confidence that if somehow the passing game wasn't working, which is hard to believe if Carson Palmer stays healthy, that it wouldn't work for a full game, that you have something to lean on. And not only that, but you've got Chris Johns. I mean, you've got Andre Ellington barely in the offense right now, and he's healthy because you don't need him. And you're barely using David Johnson, who has shown already that he could be a pretty good – the fact that they can run it and the fact that they've got multiple guys, that if one guy got dinged up, you're okay, that just changes everything.
And I'll go on the other side and look at the passing game, and I'm so interested to see how the passing game is going to do in Seattle against that Legion of Boom that everybody talks about. And I know last year, obviously, you had Drew Stanton and Ryan Lindley, and especially that game up there, the Cardinals were riding high, and they had Stanton, and they felt like they could win that game, but that secondary just totally shut down the passing game, and they've done it to so many teams. You know you're not going to need you know, 28 points probably to beat Seattle. So you're not going to need to have the game like they had, 374 yards passing. But if you can move the ball through the air, that's what I'm interested to see, if they can keep it up against Seattle and some of the other good teams.
And that Seattle secondary plays such a physical brand of football. And they basically say, you're not going to be able to call contact or PI on every single snap. We're going to play this way. We're going to make you adjust. And I totally agree. I mean, you know, it's just a different defense that you face when you go up there. Here's my question to end this thing. Darren, I think it was you asked the bye week question, and you got a in response out of Bruce Arians. Did one of you guys ask about Pro Bowlers? And I think the question was
that was somebody else.
You know, how many Pro Bowlers do you think you have halfway through the season?
I think it's a little early to be asking about Pro Bowlers, but whatever. I got a good quote.
It was. I don't really give a blank, said Bruce Arians. How many Super Bowlers? That's what I want to know.
So that's a fair question.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Okay. All right. Anything else I'm missing on the first half of the season?
No, you're not
gentlemen.
Missing anything. Okay. Are we allowed to go on the bye now?
Oh, wow.
Can I smile a little bit?
He's ready to get out of here.
Darren Urban, we need a full day out of you, pal. We got an eye on you and your time card.
I just think overall it was a very encouraging first half where they finished 6-2, but you honestly think they probably should have been 7-1 or 8-0, and the fact that they're playing this well. But it was the easier part of the schedule, and now you face, you know, really a gauntlet down the stretch, and they're fighting for playoff positioning and fighting for the NFC West, so it's exciting to see how it's going to turn out.
Is it realistic to look at Green Bay and go, yeah, I'm glad they lost. I'm glad they got worked over by Denver, because you know what? We want the home field advantage. Look at Carolina. Oh, I can't believe they won. I mean, is that realistic? Do you think this team is vying for home field advantage come December?
I think it's going to be awful tough unless Carolina loses sooner rather than later. They're playing a really weak schedule. They play the AFC South. They play in a weak division. I think it's going to be tough to catch Carolina at this point, although they play the Packers this week, so I guess, you know, now you're rooting for the Packers.
I think it's totally realistic the way they've played, and I'm not super sold on Carolina. I know their schedule's easy, but it's the NFL. Teams can lose, and you figure if you go 12-4, you're right in that, and I think – You eye that Green Bay-Denver game, and you're certainly rooting for the Broncos, so
are you
sure they're happy about that.
Ever?
Let me answer first, then you can disagree with me.
What the hell?
It's good. It's good. Yeah, I was just told in my ear that Darren's car is idling in the parking lot, so we should end. The bye starts now on azcardinals.com.